Hello, this is Dr. Gary Sherman, the Heart Guy, and I welcome you to our exciting and informative podcast titled The Heart Guy Presents The Heart of the Matter, bringing you interesting discussions and conversations related to the vast and important subject of heart disease and heart failure and everything related to that in today's ever-changing world. You're in for a real treat because I'm extremely honored to have as my special guest Andrew Gilmartin. Andrew is an amazing young leader, and I mean leader, in the medical and global community. After graduating Long Island Lutheran High School, where he played baseball, still my favorite spectator sport, Andrew went on to earn his bachelor's degree with honors in finance at Molloy College in New York, where he also played golf. Now he's singing my song. He then went on to New York University, where Andrew earned his certificate in financial planning in 2020. After being an investment and credit intern at a number of firms in the New York tri-state area, Andrew worked as a senior associate in business development for Fiduciary Trust International for nearly 4 years, finally landing at his present position with Leventhal Global Advisors, where he now serves as a senior associate in investment and wealth management. Believe it or not, Andrew is a board member for the American Heart Association's Young Professional Group, the New York City chapter. And it is his personal story that is at the heart of what I hope he will share with us today. Wow, Andrew, welcome to The Heart Guy Presents The Heart of the Matter.
Thank you, Gary. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. I'm so glad you are. And so Andrew, you're going through your young life at the time with your hopes and dreams, and you experience a cardiac event at such a young age. Share with me what that was like and when that occurred, actually.
Sure, Gary. So like you said, I'm, you know, pretty young. I'm 25 years old now, but my heart story actually started 6 years ago in 2015 when I was 19 years old and just a sophomore in college. And growing up, I was always active and had never had any symptoms of heart disease. But I remember during the winter of 2015, I started getting these weird episodes where my heart rate would be elevated when I was getting ready to go to sleep at night. And when I brought this concern to my parents, they thought that maybe it was stress or something related with school, you know, final exams, projects, paperwork, pending internships. And so for a couple of weeks, I thought that might be the case. But as this continued to progress, these, you know, elevated heart rates, and sometimes in over 100, I approached them again and said, you know, I really think something's off here. And with heart disease prevalent in my family, my dad has AFib and his dad had passed away of a heart attack at a young age, we thought it would be prudent to go to the emergency room at St. Francis just to get things checked out.
Yeah. But I'm sorry to interrupt, but you know, you point out the family history and how important that is to the process. People underestimate it. A lot of times we fill out forms in the hospital and such, and they always ask about a family history. Is there a family history of heart disease? And we see right away when you're starting to tell your story here, that family history does come into play.
Absolutely. You couldn't be more spot on with that. The interesting thing, though, is my disease, which I'll eventually get to that, is I had my aortic valve replaced, but no one in my family has it that we know of, and it's a congenital disease, but it's also something that I had from birth. So getting back to that night, all my test results came back okay. They did an EKG, they took blood work, and everything seemed to come back fine, but out of precaution, my dad reached out to his cardiologist to see if he can fit me in to do more thorough testing. And so, you know, within the next week or so, I was in the cardiologist's office doing an echocardiogram and doing a stress test. But before I even took any of those tests, when the cardiologist put the stethoscope on my chest, right away, he was able to identify that there was a leak somewhere in my heart within the valves. Which valve, we couldn't determine until we did an echo, but later on, the echocardiogram confirmed that I had a leak in my aortic valve. And from there, I was set to monitor it. It's a condition that can't get better on its own. It could either kind of, you know, stay neutral, but over time, it's going to get worse. And eventually, you will need to get surgery. And so I went about my normal life. I was optimistic because I knew that I was with a great cardiologist that was on top of things. And, you know, I didn't want this to deter me from doing the things in my life that I like to do, playing sports, you know, going out with friends, and all the things that young people should be doing. So over the course of the next year, that's how I lived my life. And when I went back to the cardiologist's office in April of 2016, I had been feeling really good. I knew that my condition was under control. It was under surveillance, and I didn't think anything of it than an annual checkup. So I go in that day. I have my echocardiogram. I'm, you know, driving home. Probably went to go play golf somewhere if it wasn't too cold. And
yeah, I know.
You know, later that night, my mom had come home with dinner after a long day of work, and it was just her and I at the time, and we're sitting down at the dinner table. And it was kind of odd because when we sit down as a family, we usually talk about our day, what went on, how everyone was doing. But I noticed that she was more concerned using the iPad that we had just gotten her for that last Christmas, which we were happy about, my sister and I.
Yeah.
Because she was using it. But I thought it was odd that she wasn't really joining in on conversation with me when it was just us.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked her, I said, you know, Mom, what's going on? And she's like, oh, nothing, you know, Did the doctor ever tell you what would happen or what would entail this surgery if you needed to get it? And I said, yeah, you know, the valve would need to be replaced. I know there's a choice between a mechanical valve or a tissue valve, but I'm not all that concerned about it. And so she continues scrolling on her iPad, and I really kind of just had it. And I said, Mom, you know, what's going on? What's wrong? And she goes, you know, your dad heard from the cardiologist today. Your condition has gotten worse, meaning the leak in the valve has gotten worse. And what's called your ejection fraction, the amount of blood that's pumped out to the body and the amount of blood that remains in the heart, had dropped. And so the cardiologist was recommending surgery as early as possible. Mind you, I'm still in school, in my spring semester, and I need to finish that out. I don't want to stop. But Gary, I'll tell you, I have a pretty good appetite, and that's one of the few times in my life that I've ever lost my appetite and stopped eating. I didn't expect this news to come as soon as it was. Remind you, it had been a year prior that I even found out that I had this condition.
Yeah.
So I was a little shaken up by it, but I knew that, you know, you have a choice in life, and you can either be optimistic and positive, or you can be pessimistic and think of the bad things. And so I decided, let's get on it. Let's do what we need to do, make the decisions that we need to, meaning where am I going to have the surgery? Who's going to be the surgeon? What valve am I going to choose? And mind you, I was not a strong science major. So all this was very new to me.
Yeah. A couple of things that you said that struck me. And the first of which is that your father was smart enough to ask the doctor to take more tests, you know, for you. That's something, that empowerment is something that a lot of people don't have, and they don't understand that they need to do that, that they need to ask the doctors to test further to make sure that an illness isn't present. One of the assumptions would be based on the fact that you're a young person. But that's especially true for women, because a lot of cardiac disease in women is missed, and missed by the women themselves, not necessarily doctors, because they dismiss their symptoms to being stress, or, you know, my son's getting bullied in school, and so I'm under stress, and they go home. And meanwhile, there's significant coronary artery disease there, you know? So if the tests are not done, then the patients are set up for a more serious event like a heart attack. And so I give him a lot of credit for pushing for you to have those tests. And then the other thing is, you know, the perspective of a young person versus an older person, because again, another myth is that cardiac disease and heart attacks and all this kind of thing and the need for valve replacement is about older people. And that's simply not true. There are so many people like yourself, younger people, a high percentage of cardiac patients that are young people. And so that's something that the general public needs to understand as well, So, you know, you're pointing this out. So from your perspective as a young person, it's clearly different because your whole life is in front of you. And you're having the attitude that you have is to your credit, but it's also why you are able to recover as well as you have. And so what was your recovery like?
Sure. So after that night, went through the tests and the pretests and the choosing of the doctors, and I ended up having my surgery June 1st of 2016 at New York Presbyterian Weill Cornell in New York City. And so the day of surgery, I got there a little early. I got there about 10 a.m. for a 1 p.m. surgery. And I was supposed to go in at 1, but it turned out that a patient in front of me had been sicker. So I kept getting pushed and pushed and pushed. And what that did is it actually taught me patience, Gary. It taught me that for myself, being young, I'm going into this life-changing surgery, but there are also people out there that are very sick, right? And I know, you know, in speaking with you and getting to know you better, you have your LVAD in and suffer from congestive heart failure. That's something serious. So, you know, these doctors and nurses, like Sam pointed out in one of your last episodes, I think they deserve a lot more credit than they get, not only in performing the surgery, but leading and helping towards a successful recovery. So post-surgery, I was in the hospital for about 6 days. And then what I call the real recovery began. I was released from the hospital. Everything went really well, which I'm extremely grateful for. And for the next 6 weeks, I had to sleep in a recliner and kind of sleep upright because they had gone through the chest, open heart surgery. So my sternum was broken. And, yeah. You know, I couldn't lay flat because, you know, it could tear. It just wasn't comfortable as well. But I was also not recommended any real physical therapy other than going for 2 to 3 walks per day. And mind you, this is dead in the middle of the summer. So I'm going outside at 8 a.m. hoping that it's going to be somewhat cool out, but it's 90 degrees, it's humid. And, you know, I did that for 8 weeks and continued doing that to today. But, you know, recovery, it was tough. I would have friends that would come visit me and they'd want to keep me in high spirits and make me laugh. But it was also painful to laugh because realize that this is all coming from the middle of your chest, right?
Yeah, it's not nothing, that's for sure, right. Yeah, it's a big saw that they use to open your chest, yeah.
And yeah. You know, you can't sneeze, you can't cough, you're scared to do it, but day by day I felt myself getting a little better, and shortly after the surgery, actually I found myself not as fatigued as I was pre-surgery, and
right.
Just that alone gave me the mindset that you are healthier than you were before this, and you're continuing to get healthier, and you know, life's not going to change all that much. And so I credit the doctors, the nurses, the support system that I had in my family, my friends, and those that I could speak to in you know, leading to a successful recovery. But you know, it wasn't easy to start.
And you're right. I mean, certainly they deserve all the credit in the world, more than people can imagine. I had no idea, for example, before I had my heart surgeries, that what nurses did in the hospital. I mean, I had a certain perception of what they do. It's incredible what the nurses and doctors do for their patients. If you don't see it with your own eyes, you cannot believe it. So you're right there. However, I often tell people, I think this is part of one of my presentations, I often tell people that there's a line on the bottom of most of the papers, the release papers, when you leave the hospital, whether it's for a procedure or an emergency. And there's one line down there that is there, but I don't know if nobody reads it. Certainly nobody takes it seriously. And the line is that, it says, you are the most important part of your recovery. And although the doctors and nurses do their best to support you, it really is up to you, the patient, to decide, I'm going to heal, I'm going to get better, just like you have. And you, Andrew, you have done that. And that's not an easy thing to get yourself up and recover in the way that you have and have a positive spirit in the face of your disease is really something that you should, it's a real feather in your cap. So you should be proud of yourself for that.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
So, yeah, I just want to tell you that. So have you had to make any changes in your lifestyle already, like at such a young age?
So you might be surprised, but really not that many. The only restriction that the cardiologist told me that I have is from lifting heavy weights. And again, I don't have the body type of a bodybuilder, so I'm not going into the gym trying to bench press three times my weight. Mm-hmm. But, focus on cardio. Low weight, high reps, no real dietary restrictions. I took it upon myself to limit certain things that over the long term will cause more problems or could cause more problems,
right,
like red meat. I try to cut down on that and really just try and live a healthier lifestyle. My sister might tell everyone that I overdo it and I overthink it. But, at the end of the day, I think the restrictions that you're given are also part of the mindset too, right? I'm not saying overdo anything, but what you choose to do is ultimately, like you said, going to lead to your recovery. And if I can take every step that I can to make my longevity that much better and that much higher of a possibility, I'm going to do what I can.
Yeah. And the truth is, what we put in our bodies, and I ate everything. I went to restaurants, I had a nice life. I was enjoying myself. But, in the end, what we put in our bodies really is very important to our health, and we do have to pay attention to it. That's not to say you can't have a treat once in a while on a nice big steak. You need that. We all need to enjoy our lives, but not make it a regular thing, and be mindful of what you're eating. So I think that the changes you made, you tell your sister it's fine. You're doing the right thing. We should all do that just a little bit better. And even I've learned to do that at an older age. I've learned to change my diet a bit. And I'm enjoying the things that I can eat. There's a lot of things that are good for us that actually taste good. So I think that you're doing the right thing. You could have taken care of your health needs and went on your merry way, but you decided to join the American Heart Association and work with them. So tell us a little bit, or tell me a little bit about what you're doing in that role, and how does this work benefit our listeners and the global heart community?
Sure. So I think before I get into exactly what we're doing, I want to tell why I joined the American Heart Association.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Behind that. So that summer when I was home, not able to really do anything, I found myself thinking a lot, because it was such a life-changing experience, how I wanted to live my life, and both how could I give back and help in a way that was heart related, and then also in looking through for a career, what can I do? But with the American Heart Association, I had wanted to join them almost immediately after coming out of the hospital. And while I was in the hospital, I was doing some research, and it took a few years, but I finally got a connection there that introduced me to the team that inevitably worked with the Young Professionals Group. And so I joined the YPs, is what we call ourselves, mm-hmm, back in August of 2019, just as a volunteer. And I joined their committee for their Red Ball, which is one of the bigger events that the YPs puts on in usually November of every year.
Yeah, yeah.
And as I got to know everyone there, the thing that I found was most important is, and this probably would have helped even more in recovery, is being part of a community of people that have either gone through something similar, know someone who have gone through something similar, or want to help those that have gone through something like I have and many have. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of what I was looking for, because as much as people could see on the outside what I was going through, being in the hospital, recovery, they didn't know what was going on between the ears. And to that point, for me, every little twitch or thing I feel in my body, I always worry about the heart. And being able to talk to someone or a group of people about these feelings and what were their experiences like, that's what ultimately made me want to join the American Heart Association. So it just worked out that I really found a passion for being part of this group, and fortunately I was able to now join their board for the YPs back in last year.
Right.
And prior to that, they always do their virtual Wall Street Run and Heart Walk every year or so. Mm-hmm. And usually this takes place in downtown Manhattan, a big people. Right. But unfortunately, due to COVID last year, the event went virtual. It was a huge success. And because everyone had been cooped up in their houses, their apartments, wherever they may have been, I tried to at first get a group of friends to do it. And it turned out to be this larger group. We were a team underneath the YP team. We had about 40 people or so, Gary. And to make it feel like we were all together, you know, you run this 5K, but you're doing it virtually wherever you are. I had asked people to submit videos and photos of themselves and their families and their friends doing it. And at the end of the weekend, because it's a weekend event, even though it starts on one day, put together this compilation of everyone. It resonated really well. And it was things like that that made me think, you know, being part of this organization, the AHA, you're really making an impact on people's lives, both, you know, those that are part of the YPs, those that want to join the YPs, those that are out there that aren't part of the American Heart Association, but maybe have dealt with family member themselves, a friend that has gone through a heart-related matter. It just brings together a community of people that are all trying to gather around the same mission. The AHA has been able to do wonderful things for me.
Yeah, and I'm blown away. I mean, and everybody should understand. I think that during the pandemic, there were people who complained about, you know, college kids causing a lot of COVID to spread by being together and gathering and all that. But there's so many young people that are figuring out ways to help each other and to help others, whether it's heart disease or COVID or anything like that. Young people that are doing such good things like you, Andrew, and it's amazing. I just want people to know that there's a lot of good young people out there like you, and it's great. It's great. I love the creativity as far as even running. You can't run together, so you run separate, and you figure out how to bring that together through Zoom or however you ended up doing it. But you made sure to do it, and that was the important thing. Yeah, that's terrific. So tell us about how the Wall Street Run and Heart Walk, hosted by the American Heart Association, how can other people get involved in this event if they wanted to?
Sure. So this year they actually altered the event a little bit, and instead of having it be one day, they rebranded it to kind of be a month-long heart challenge experience. So if you want to, you know, join our team or donate, you can go to www.heart.org/go-to/heartwalk-YPS, and that will bring you to the page to join our team. But the interesting thing about this challenge is the 1 month is where it starts, and that begins actually tomorrow on April 23rd. You can download the HeartWalk app and track your total minutes of activity over the course of the month.
Wow.
And then when we get to a week before the event, starting on May 17th, you have the 1 week, or the wellness week is what we're referring to it as. And this is the week of wellness. And I think everyone can kind of understand this, that over the last year, it's been really hard to take care of yourself. So there's going to be daily themed engagement opportunities around different pillars of physical, mental, and emotional health. And again, these will all be released each day of that week leading up to the event. And then the event itself, the 1 day, which, like I said earlier, actually goes through that weekend, the Wall Street Run and Heart Walk 5K will, you know, start on May 20th. And there will be a virtual leaderboard so people can post their times. But like I said earlier, the link to join our team, if you'd like to, which would be great. We'd love to have more participants than last year. Again, is www.heart.org/go-to/heartwalk-YPS.
Great. And for everybody listening, I'll have those details listed in the podcast on whatever platform that you get our podcast on. Those details will be there, so don't worry if you missed it. I'll have that listed there. So it'll be clear. And hopefully a lot of people want to be involved in this event. We can't wait to be outside again. I mean, we're all itching to get back outside for sure. So, and with that in mind, you have any plans for the spring or the summer? What are some of the things that you're looking forward to doing?
Sure. So I think for me right now, you know, I'm actually buckling down a little bit heading into the spring and the summer. I'm studying for my certified financial planner exam.
Of course you are.
That's not to say that I will not be spending a lot of time with friends out on the golf course. You know, hopefully things COVID related slow down a little bit so we can see some return to normalcy. But for me, you know, studying a lot now, I've been inside a lot. I'm just ready to get outside, enjoy the nice weather.
Well, I'm going to push you. I'm going to take you up on playing golf because you should see what I can do with 10 pounds of batteries on
me. Absolutely. It'd be a pleasure to golf with you and, you know, to share stories, you know, heart related, personal, professional. And I think, you know, any way I can get outside is how I'm going to spend my summer. I have a good friend of mine who's getting married in San Diego.
Oh, great. Yeah.
So I will actually be playing Torrey Pines.
Yeah, good. Now, you know that the U.S. Open is there this year, right? So you have to time it for after that.
And for those listening, I will not be participating in the U.S. Open.
Yeah, you got to watch those fast greens after, though. You know, right. It's not an easy course.
No, but it'll be great to be out there.
Absolutely. That's great. I love hearing about that. Andrew, it's been my great honor to have you as a guest on The Heart of the Matter. That is The Heart Guy Presents The Heart of the Matter. And folks, Andrew is an example of someone still in their 20s, of a person who, because of and in spite of his personal experience with heart disease, continues to adapt and find ways to positively contribute to our global heart community. Andrew, on behalf of myself and our listeners, I thank you so much for all that you've done for our community on Long Island and the global community with your incredible dedication to your work and for sharing this time with us. I hope that we can do this again soon and play golf together.
Thank you, Gary. It's been a pleasure to be on. And don't worry, we're going to make sure the round of golf happens.
All right, good. Folks, that's our podcast for today. Please join me, Dr. Gary Sherman, the Heart Guy, next time for another intriguing, informative, and entertaining conversation. Please visit our website at www.drheart2heart.net. That's DRHEART, the numeral 2, HEART.net, for upcoming podcasts, or if you'd like me to be a host for an online presentation for your group or organization, I can do that. If you'd like to be a guest on the Heart Guy Presents the Heart of the Matter podcast, please email me at theheartguyspeaks@gmail.com. Our podcast can be found on Apple iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And until next time, this is Dr. Gary Sherman, the Heart Guy, wishing you peace and hope.